welcome back to the Hoops Temple Pod. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz, and joining me on the other side of the world, Dylan Williamson.
Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Dylan. Or should I say, bad morning? Today was a tragic day in the heart of all New Zealanders, and myself, by proxy of being your friend and watching a fair amount of the New Zealand Taskmaster on TikTok. Today, New Zealand lost one of its truest sons to a season-ending injury. How are we feeling about Stephen Adams being out?
Truly tragic news to wake up to see, you know, NBA legend Stephen Adams gone for the season. When we were talking about Memphis earlier, I remember messaging you guys and being like, Memphis is always good when Stephen Adams plays. And mm-hmm. I did like some rinky-dinky math. I was like, okay, this is how good they are when he plays. If we put him in for 50 games, they are going to win 50 games, essentially, is the way that the math worked out. Like, if you've got Stephen Adams, you're winning 50 games. And now it gets really sketchy for them. They already had questions around depth. Brandon Clark's already out, who would be probably their next best center. John Morant missing games, obviously. And so that's a lot on, I guess, Santi Aldama and Big Body Roddy. Like, some of these guys have to pop. And so it's a big blow for the Grizzlies, a big blow for New Zealand, and indeed for the world.
And I don't know if you saw, but there was a recent Memphis preseason hype video asking all of the Grizzlies, would you prefer Taylor Swift or Travis Kelce? And to a T, every Grizzly said Kelce, except for Stephen Adams. And I'm just saying that's the veteran leadership that Memphis really needs out there on the court and in the locker room. I went through and I pulled up Memphis's first 25 games where they're going to be both jawless and Stephen Adams lists, and they play a bunch of Western Conference playoff teams. I think it was 12 games against projected Western Conference playoff teams, three of them against Dallas. So Dallas is going to be the biggest.
That'd be big because, yeah, Dallas is, by our projection, sort of the team that they're competing with for that. Well, you know, Dallas is the lowest ranked of those 11 elite Western Conference teams. And so if Dallas can pick up some wins on them, you know, each one counts as double.
I hate to tell you this. The Clippers were the last ranked of the 11 playoffs.
Come on.
But hey, they got one game against Clippers too. So there's some Clippers wins in there. Actually, Houston's got like a pair of games against them, as do the Jazz and Blazers. So like maybe our tankathon got a little bit less tanky, but we're here to talk about a glorious division of mediocrity, the Central Division, which contains my homeland, the Midwest, the Pistons, and the Bulls, the Pacers, the Bucks, looks in the Cavs. How are we feeling about the Central Division?
It's not super mediocre. Like, there are two really good teams in this division, and you know there are a couple of mediocre teams, but there's also a young team on the come up. Be interesting to see what you think of the Pacers with a full season of Tyrese Haliburton. Do they escape the mediocrity of the 38-42 win projection?
I think so. But as always, we kind of start off, we go worst to best. Don't think there's any other place to start other than the Pistons.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pistons actually have a lot of pretty talented NBA players. You know, we were super high on Cade in our preseason rankings. They've got plenty of veterans, and so people are expecting probably a big rise for these guys. But if you look at how bad they were last year, I know like Cade is a good player, but they were one of the worst teams in the NBA last year, and they'll add Cade, which will help, but I don't think Cade's a 20-win kind of player.
Well, it's a full season of Wiseman.
did he win the battle for backup center?
I don't know. There's currently a push out of Memphis, folks, of like, fuck, we lost Stephen Adams. Let's bring back Wiseman, who played a good three games in Memphis before ruling himself out, but I don't know.
Wiseman played in Memphis?
Wiseman, in college. He played for the University of Memphis.
I was going to say, like, man, this guy's career is so forgettable. I totally forgot about his three-game stint for the Grizzlies.
It was literally he played for three games in Memphis and then was like, you know what? College isn't going to help me prepare for the NBA. I'm going to take the rest of the year off and just do NBA prep stuff.
Nice. That worked wonders for his development.
I mean, it did work wonders for his draft stock, so maybe he knew what he was doing. I'm just going to throw that one out there. That it seems to have got him paid. So,
I mean, it got him paid on his first contract. The fact that his second contract was I guess he did kind of get overpaid on his second contract as well. So maybe things work out fine when you are a top draft prospect and play three games.
And speaking of getting paid, I have pulled up the Pistons salary sheet, and I'm wondering how many of the top seven salary earners for this season can you name without getting one wrong? So which Pistons will be making the most money in the 2023-2024 season?
Can I name seven Pistons players? That's a real challenge. All right. Bojan's got to be number one.
Bojan is number one.
They randomly get Monty Morris.
They did get Monte Morris. Monte Morris is the number seven guy with 9.8 million. So everyone else is going to be making 10 mil or more.
I think Alec Burks is making 10 million.
10.4. Yes, sir.
We were just talking about was it Wiseman that got? No, it was Bagley that got overpaid in an extension. Or was it Wiseman?
Both got overpaid. It must be.
Okay.
They're both at 12 million.
Yeah. All right. How many is left?
You just have number two and number five left.
Cade was a high pick, and high picks get paid, so I feel like Cade is there.
Cade is there, 11 mil. Then we have 19.9 million. Who are the Pistons paying $19.9 million to?
19.9? Oh, Joe Harris?
JoJo Harris, yes,
Shout out.
Way to get them all. Yeah, I think that's the sad state of the lineup when you're looking at, Our highest paid guys are Monte Morris, Alec Burks, Joe Harris, Bojan Bogdanovic.
That also speaks to what I was talking about before, though. Like, this team actually does have pretty good depth of veteran players. Mm-hmm. Like, if their sole goal, and they brought in a good coach too. Like, if their sole goal, if they have no other incentives other than win every game, they could play those veterans and get to, like, a solid level of mediocrity.
Yeah.
You know, don't play Duren, don't play Bagley, don't play Wiseman, limit Ivy, wave Killian Hayes. You could put together an 8-man rotation of actually good NBA players.
Hey, I'll have you know, Killian Hayes led the Pistons in points per game during the preseason. This is the year of Hayes.
Is there even a spot in the rotation for him?
I have him as third string point guard behind Cade and Monte Morris on my depth chart. And that might be worse because I think the Pistons are leaning towards starting Joe Harris over Jaden Ivey, which could be really interesting. I like the idea of starting Joe and Bojan Bogdanovic, just having a lot of spacing and shooting out there for Duren and Cade to operate in. I'm not sure what the rest of that lineup's going to look like, if they either go big with Isaiah Stewart or maybe give a Sir Thompson a start. It'll be interesting to kind of see, but I think it's a good look.
Yeah, and what's that good look going to work out in wins?
I don't know. What were they at last?
Are you projecting them for big improvements?
I would love to see them have a big improvement year, but I think they're like a year away from that. A year away from being a year away. Like last year, Orlando was 34 wins. I think that they need one more season before they can make that 30-plus win jump. So I'm going like 25. I know that's really harsh, but they were 17 wins last season. This is an 8-win improvement. And gets them above Washington, in my book. Puts them above Washington, Utah, and Portland. So not a bottom three team anymore.
Respect. I ended up a little bit higher on them. So I still think the defense is going to be really bad. Like for all of Jalen Duren's athletic ability and his potential, like he's still a really negative player as your defensive anchor. And if they are going to go with Bojan and Joe Harris, that's a pretty flammable, front court as well. But with Cade and with that spacing that you're talking about, I think the offense is going to get to a level of respectability. And so with my projections, they actually came out as a 31-win team. Big improvement expected. Now, the thing that will undoubtedly ruin that projection is that they're still going to be one of the worst teams, and so there's going to be downward gravity, you know, when they're miles out of the play-in. You know, are they going to keep trying to play at a 31 win pace? Probably not. You lose a few games there. So maybe what was your projection?
Mine was 25, and I was starting to feel like that was a little bit too harsh. But I've gone over on a lot of teams. It just kind of felt like I had to go under on some teams.
Yeah. I feel like maybe like 28. you know, they'll play it around a sort of low 30s win pace. But then when you get late into the season, there's no reason to keep playing your veterans to get to 31 wins. And so that drags them down, and we'll go with 28 wins.
Yeah, hey, if you go with 28, I'll bump it up to 26. We end at 27 on the average. And their solid over-under number was 27.5. So.
Oh, nice. I was about to ask. I feel like I kind of had the feeling that like the general NBA consensus was a little bit higher on them, but once again, we're infallible on our plus minus.
Yeah, I just want to have you blind guess lines and be like, all right, hey, what do you think the Chicago line is going to be set at this year?
I mean, I don't look at them and I get them all pretty much spot on.
You come up with your projections, but I want you to guess the Vegas line. What do you think Vegas is guessing for the Chicago Bulls?
Do you know off the top of your head whether they normally get inflated for being a bigger market?
I don't, but looking at the number, I would say no.
Okay, hang on, let me see. Last year, they had the point differential of a 44-win team. They won 40, so I'm guessing their over-under is 42.
37.5.
That seems surprising, yeah. Yeah, that is low. Like, I mean, they had a really weird team. Like, if you think about the Bulls roster, which is, you know, built around Vucevic, LaVine, and DeRozan, which are three pretty, you know, very good to elite offensive players and abysmal defenders, it's really strange to think that they were bad on offense and really, really good on defense. Maybe that's some, you know, Vegas saying we aren't believers in that you're a top five defense.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you take that as their big three, you're just going to be disappointed. And so I built this like trivia for you and Aaron, but without Aaron, you're just going to have to answer all the trivia questions here. That big three of DeMar, LaVine, and Vucevic, when on the court together, are they a net positive or net negative? And just for some context, I will say on the season, Chicago was a net positive 1.3 points per 100 possessions.
I mean, I would think that they would be positive, but the fact that you're asking is very concerning. Like, I would really think that would be a positive team. They had a positive net rating. They went, yeah, they had the point differential of an above 500 team. So for their three best players to not be in the positive would be quite surprising.
It is quite surprising, isn't it, that they are negative 0.87 points per 100 possessions, just under a point per 100 possessions, worse than opponents. But in 1,600 minutes, like that's a fair amount of minutes. That big three was not good together. They gave up a lot of points, 114 per 100, and only scored 113 per 100. So like kind of surprising that the big three doesn't mesh as well. And that's why I think Alex Caruso is actually one of their best players. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Oh yeah, Caruso is definitely one of their more impactful players. Looking at the four factors on how they were able to be a good defense, because that was really what carried them. Like I said, they were very mediocre on offense, but for some reason their defense was just good. They allowed a pretty high effective field goal percentage, which you'd expect when Nikola Vucevic is your starting center. But they just did everything else well. They didn't allow offensive rebounds, which you'd expect when you've got a you know, big man like Vucevic, and Andre Drummond as your backup center. They didn't really foul, which again is probably, you know, Vucevic isn't trying to contest a lot of shots, and the rest of their roster, with a few exceptions, are intelligent defenders. And then they forced a lot of turnovers, which is Alex Caruso's sort of strong point of, and some other guys on the roster too, like Javonte Green was my favorite player for the Bulls last year, who's, I think, on like a free agent. He was on the Warriors. He was on the Warriors preseason roster. I don't think they are signing him.
Oh, man. I saw that the Warriors cut Gay.
Yeah, Anthony Lamb, who played really well for them last year, is playing in New Zealand.
Man.
That was surprising.
It was sad. Yeah. They had some players. And not like Green played a ton, but he had his moments. And really, Chicago has a lot of depth issues this year. I don't know if you pulled up their roster, but I was trying to figure out like who's going to be their backups. Assuming these are their starters, Nikola Vucevic, Patrick Williams, DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and I'm going to say Javonte Carter. Although, you know, Javonte.
I think I started Kobe in the mostly in the preseason. At least the game I saw of them.
It could be Kobe. It could also be Caruso. But their bench They've got Drummond. They've got Kobe White. They've got Caruso. Ayo Dosunmu. Man, I can't speak anymore. Y'all know who I'm talking about. Torrey Craig. But, like, who is their backup power forward? The best I was looking at their roster is it might be one of their rookies, Terry Taylor, or you play Craig at the four, but then you don't have a backup small forward. Like, they are thin. That's probably where the low win projections are getting.
Yeah, yeah. The more we talk through them, the more I am doubting them.
Mm-hmm. I think they're also a really strong blow-it-up candidate. Like, we've said that for a number of years, but they're finally past the Vucevic picks, and, like, it's just time. It hasn't worked out. They gave Vu a very reasonable extension, but if you can't get to over 41 wins with this core, what are you doing? You're just getting older. Yeah. It's time to sell.
And they did get boosted by, like, the Patrick Beverley era. I'm just looking at their most played lineups. They're by far their most played lineup is Io with the other four guys. That was plus 1.3, which is not very good at all for a starting lineup. But then their second most used lineup is Beverley, Caruso, Levine, DeRozan, and Vucevic, which is plus 14. So, like, they kind of got boosted by this weird Patrick Beverley run.
Yeah. They need a point of attack defender. They have a really strong defense when you have a top point of attack defender, which is what Caruso did well for them, is what Lonzo did well for them.
Yeah. Javon Carter is a good point of attack defender.
Yeah. Yeah, he's solid. I would say Milwaukee would feel his loss, but with Dame there, they're probably just going to be happy. Yeah,
they're good at point guard.
Yeah. A fun Caruso stat is if you look at on-off numbers and you take the big three, Levine, DeRozan, and Vucevic, minus Caruso. So all of those minutes, doesn't matter who the other two guys are, they're negative 7 points per 100 possessions.
Ugh.
If you put those three plus Caruso on the floor, they are plus 8.7 points for 100 possessions. So it's like almost a 16-point swing with him on or off.
Do you think they're going to be able to score better this year? Like I was saying, they had this really weird thing where you would think that this would be an offensive team. And my cleaning the glass numbers have them as the 24th best offense. Like, they were behind Indiana, who played without Halliburton for most of the season. Like, wouldn't you expect DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and Vucevic-led team to... Do you think that that's going to be a team that's going to score better? Like, no. Do you expect some regression upwards?
No. So here's the thing. Those three players are good scorers, but they're so much better with Caruso on the floor that you have to play Caruso. And Caruso is guard PJ Tucker on offense. Like, I mean, he just doesn't look to score at all. Well, and that really hurts.
He's a negative offensive player.
And then Patrick Williams is also... not developed anything on offense. So you've got two offensive zeros, and then you just help off of them, which, like, that really clogs up your team. That's why I keep saying it's gonna be a problem in Phoenix, is, you know, if you've got two offensive zeros to help carry your defense, which is what Phoenix really needs, then you just help off of those guys and double Beal or double Booker, double Durant. And so I'm zagging low on Chicago. I'm going 35 wins.
Nice. It's difficult to throw out their entire last season where they were actually, you know, a good defense. And like I said, there's nothing that's seemingly unsustainable about that. But I am going to project some defensive decline. Do we expect the offense to be a little bit better?
Green is probably a better offensive player than Caruso. And if he gets, we talked about Javonte Green, and I keep looking at Javon Carter. Javon Carter is probably a better offensive player.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to – my numbers come out at 38.5. That sounds like maybe playing territory, so maybe that's a push. So maybe I go to 39. But then there's also, like you say, there's blowed-up potential. Like, if you're playing at a below 500 pace and you come to the trade deadline and you've got Zach LaVine, you've got DeMar DeRozan, maybe there's impetus to go that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Rui Hachimura could look real nice in a Bulls uniform.
Isn't that just so fucking inevitable that, like, the fucking Lakers do everything wrong and just, like, keep failing upwards?
Listen, when it came out that Rui and D'Lo's salaries match Kyrie's, I'm like, please God, don't be Kyrie. Who else is from Los Angeles that wants to come home? Hey, yeah. Hey, DeMar? Yeah. He's from LA.
Is he expiring too? That could he flick some pre-agency ability? He is expiring, yeah.
Yeah, he is?
Yeah, yeah. So he could really flex that. Oh my God. Isn't this inevitable? DeMar's going to be on the freaking Lakers by the post-trade deadline.
I actually have seen rumors of him to the Clippers that he,
yeah,
he's
yeah.
talking
that's,
about.
That's the other thing, right? Is like, if Morey wants to just be a fucking douchebag about Harden and not accept a pretty reasonable offer when no one else is bidding, then why don't you just make that same offer to the Bulls and get DeRozan instead? Mm-hmm. Even less of an offer. Like, mm-hmm. tell me expirings and one first round pick isn't, you know, better than what anyone else is going to give you?
Yeah. Or keep the pick and put Mann in. Like, yeah, that's kind of what I've heard, is that like Mann was untouchable, but it's because they're putting in this pick. And if you're not going to put in the pick, well, I don't know. I think there's ways to make this trade happen. But what are you putting the Bulls down for wins wise?
We'll do 38.
Oh, 38.
Which is predicting a big drop for them. They were, I think, a 44 win expectation last year. So
yeah, lost the clutch gene. DeMar had it 2 years ago, but not
last
year.
And yeah, that's another thing, is that they underperformed their point differential quite substantially after way overperforming it. So all those clutch plays, you know, missed the clutch, suddenly maybe that's a little bit of luck.
Yeah. All right. On to, I'm going to guess, the Indiana Pacers we have as that that mid-tier team here.
Yeah.
This is a fun one for trivia questions. It has nothing to do with the Pacers, but I really just wanted to work a way to bring in this stuff.
That's my favorite NBA trivia, when it's got nothing to do with the Pacers.
The Pacers led the league in individual assister to individual shooter for three-point made baskets, with Tyrese Halliburton assisting Buddy Hield on 101 three-point shots made. What are the next five highest assister to shooter combinations? And I will give you the teams.
Only last year?
Only last year.
Okay.
There are two Sacramento Kings pairings, two Golden State Warriors pairing, and one Denver Nugget pairing.
And so this is just assists, right? It's not to three-point shooters?
It is assister to three-point shooter.
Okay, right. I'm going to guess Draymond to Steph and also Draymond to Clay.
Draymond to... No, actually, neither of those are correct.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. You said there were two Golden State duos and...
I'm sorry. Draymond to Clay is correct.
Yeah. And then there's the other one, Steph to Clay?
The other one is Steph to Clay.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then two from Sacramento.
Two from Sacramento.
Who's getting assisted buckets? It's like Sabonis to Keegan Murray.
Sabonis to Keegan Murray is right? One. Yes, sir. 70 assisted threes.
It's the other one, Fox to Monk.
Is not.
Damn it. I need Aaron here for this.
I really wanted to work in the fact that Tyrese Halliburton assisted Buddy Hield on 101 made threes.
Yeah. Yeah. Jokic to Michael Porter, I think, would be the Denver one.
63.
It's not like De'Aaron Fox to Trey Lyles, is it?
Nope.
Is it just rearrange all the players I've already said? Sabonis to Monk.
It is Sabonis to Kevin Herter. Second most in the league.
Yeah. I forgot Kevin Herter existed. I was like, who's playing the two for Sacramento? Yeah. No, that makes total sense. Yeah.
So Indiana made a couple of offseason acquisitions. Obi Toppin, Bruce Brown. They drafted that Jairus Walker kid who's super athletic, super mobile. Well, could be one of the fastest teams in the league. What are we thinking?
When they played with Halliburton last year, their offense was ridiculous. And so expecting a big jump there. Buddy Hield, though, is making a bit of a fuss. Like, they played him all year at the three, where he provided a lot of value to their offense. Mm-hmm. Like you just said, he was, you know, Halliburton was, you know, just handing him three-pointers on a silver platter. He's either coming off the bench or not playing because they told him that he's good at getting benched for Bruce Brown. And so that will negatively affect the offense. The defense really sucked, which was strange, I suppose. Even with Miles Turner on, they've normally been a good defense, but last year it really sucked. I'm going to assume that's just because they weren't playing high level of NBA players, and they'll play better NBA players this year. So I think, you know, they'll end up as a decent-ish defense. Adam Bruce Brown is a really good point of attack defender. And then they'll be a pretty good offense, having a full season of Halliburton. And so my predictions came out at 43.8.
That is high.
It is high, right?
These guys.
I didn't think I did when we did the because I do these divisions one by one, so mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, I haven't done the whole league. But when we did whichever division the Raptors are in,
Atlantic,
and yeah, who the fuck knows? When we did the Atlantic, I remember making the case of like, no, like the Raptors are going to be better than the Pacers. But like I was saying, if we expect some defensive improvement back to like a reasonable rate, which they have defended well with Turner every year except last year. And then we expect a year out of Tyrese Haliburton, who we projected as what, like a top 40 player?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we did even higher than that.
Yeah. Like we're saying, they're going to drive good offense and the defense should return to a reasonable rate. And like when you're pretty good on offense and pretty good on defense, that comes out as a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, 44 wins is my prediction.
I like that they've got a number of young players that we could see improvement from. I know it's been a while. Jalen Smith hasn't shown it yet, but he's been solid. Isaiah Jackson, Jairus Walker. If any of those guys hit, that's awesome. If none of them hit, yeah, they got Daniel Tice, who I've been calling washed for years, and every time I make fun of him, he proves me wrong. So, you know, let's
see. World Cup winner Daniel Tice?
World Cup winner. Dylan Brooks did not take kindly to that in the first Pacers preseason game. And you see the nut shot that got him thrown out in 5 minutes of preseason action? Yeah. I think he's still harboring a grudge at being
knocked World Cup revenge.
Yeah. Such a bullshit player. But like, you know, off the bench, hey, you got TJ McConnell. If Benedict Mathurin steps up and he takes over the starting spot, like Bruce Brown, yeah, your bench could include Buddy or Bruce, TJ. Like, they've got some solid guys. Is decent depth. I went with 42 wins because I think that they really want to be above 500. I don't think that they're gonna, you know, I don't think they're gonna stop.
Yeah.
And they want this.
This is the kind of team that pushes for those, you know, sort of getting every win mm-hmm. around that 40 win pace where you've got. They're too good to tank. Like, if Tyrese Haliburton's going to play and Miles Turner's going to play, like, you are just going to win games. There's no point in trying anything else. And they're young, so they're not going to be resting guys. Like, this is the kind of team. This is a try-hard team. This is a team mm-hmm. that will go for you know, every win. They've got a good coach. They've got...
Who is their coach?
Rick Carlisle.
Oh, fuck, that does kind of ruin my plan, though. I mean, I was thinking that this is going to be one of the fastest teams. They're going to gamble. They're going to get steals. I wish they had more of like a kamikaze coach, like someone that's going to be a little bit more okay with just some chaos.
I think Carlisle is more okay with that than you think. Really? I think he kind of gets colored by the Luka years, where Luka is like such a slow guy that he just slows down the entire team. And I think that was more Luka than it was Carlisle. Because the Pacers have been a reasonable pace since Carlisle's come on. And I think he's a smart enough coach that he's going to realize that the way that they are going to be a really good offense is by pushing the pace.
See, I'm not coloring him that because of the Luka years. I'm coloring him that because I'm old and I remember him coaching the Pistons at the start of the 2000s and then the Pacers.
Daniel
and Ron Artest. And, yeah,
those Pistons and Pacers weren't putting up 120 positions a game.
No, those were some defensive slugfests of teams. But I
think he's a smart coach and he'll adapt to his roster.
Well, I'd like to see it. I went with 42, you went with 43. So I think we're both in favor of them being a solid above 500 team. Maybe not solidly, but like they're going to get there, which I think just looking at our projections in the East, assuming Milwaukee and Cleveland is ahead of them. The only other teams we had above 500 in the East were Atlanta, Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. So this would put them at the seventh seed, top of the play-in.
That feels about right.
Feels like a good spot for them. Well, from the Pacers to the Cavaliers.
I guess just one thing before we move on.
Yeah.
If they lose Haliburton or Turner for any extended period, like they're... offense or defense respectively are gonna really suffer, and so they are quite reliant I think on those guys. If Daniel Tice becomes your backup center or TJ McConnell becomes your starting point guard, like you're really gonna suffer, and so that's the way that this could go down. But those guys aren't particularly injury prone, and they're both young, so we shouldn't expect that.
Yeah, that is always a fear. Like I said, they've got good depth. Everyone has good depth until the season starts and they start losing guys.
When George Hill becomes your backup point guard and TJ McConnell's the starter, like your offense is going to plummet.
Yeah. All right. Well then, to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who boast one of the best four-man units out there. In 871 minutes of combined action for Garland, Mobley, Mitchell, and Allen, they outscored opponents by a total of 167 points. There are 35 four-man units who played.
Doesn't name all of them?
No. 35 four-man units who played between 700 minutes and the max of 1,189 minutes. How many of those four-man units, which for reference, a four-man unit could be, you could have multiple of these units from the same team. How many of those four-man units were outscored opponents by more total points than the four-man unit for the Cleveland Cavaliers? So out of 35.
The Warriors, I know, are a great four-man unit, but I feel like their guys missed enough time that cumulative effect may not play in. Denver was the best team and they played their starters together all the time, so I'm guessing that they were up there. You're not giving me any assurance with this.
I'm trying to play this with as straight of a face as possible.
Okay, right. I'm guessing the amount of teams, right? Not okay.
You're guessing the amount of individual four-man units.
I'm guessing that there were two from the Nuggets. Who else had a really good four-man lineup? I'm guessing there was a Celtics one because they had, I think, the best point differential in the East. And maybe one other. I'm going to say there were three.
There were seven better lineups.
God damn it.
You had the Philadelphia 76ers with P.J. Tucker, James Harden, Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid.
Nice.
You had the Boston Celtics with Horford, Brown, Tatum, and White. You had the Denver Nuggets with KCP, Gordon, Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. The Denver Nuggets with KCP, Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter Jr. The Denver Nuggets with Gordon, Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter Jr. The Denver Nuggets with KCP, Gordon, Jokic, Michael Porter Jr. And the Nuggets with KCP, Gordon, Jokic, and Murray.
Like, I knew that the Nuggets would have multiple because Mike Malone loves to like play as many of his starters together at a time as he can, which is why Jokic's advanced stats are so ridiculous. Part of it. Obviously, he's a very good player. That's part of it as well. But I don't think he'd dominate the entire thing.
Well, it's that five-man unit split up into four, or split up into five four-man units. It's the same five players, but, you know, all right, we're going to leave out Jokic. We're going to leave out, you know, Murray. We're going to leave out. But I thought that was interesting. Like, basically, there were only three combinations of four-man units that outperformed this group of guys within a reasonable minute sum. And the question is, as always has been with Cleveland, who is going to be that fifth guy? They've added Max Strus. They've added George Niang. They've added, kept Caris LeVert. Dean Wade is back. Damian Jones has ended up in Ohio for some reason. He will not be the fifth guy, but just name off caps.
Could you imagine?
We're going to go fucking huge.
It's a good way to get fired in five games if you're the coach.
They also brought in Tristan Thompson. He had a three-point shot. He hit a three-pointer last year. So, you know.
Isn't it weird that Tristan Thompson is this guy that's like constantly getting negative press for like off-court stuff? Is like a big distraction with like, you know, the shit shows here. You remember that sort of era? And like teams keep bringing him in as like this veteran presence.
He won a ring. He's been to multiple finals. He can be that guy. I don't know. It's so weird. If you look at Basketball Reference, he didn't play in a single regular season game last year. So you're like, oh, did he not play? And you're like, no. He's got some Lakers minutes in the playoffs for some reason. And I lied. He did not hit a three for the Lakers last year. I could have sworn he did.
It was from the pregame highlight reel.
But, you know, do you feel like Max Strus or George Niang properly addresses their need?
I think as well as they could have done with quite limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they needed a wing who could shoot and at least kind of hold up defensively of the guys that were available for what they had to offer. Max Drews is probably the best they could have done. And then, you know, they needed a guy that they could play on the front line that can stretch the floor, who could play with either Mobley or with Allen. And Niang's a really solid shooter. And so, yeah, I think that with what they had available, they did very well. And like, this is already a very good team. Like, they were the best defense in the league. What was their point differential? Cleveland, 55-win point differential last year. So like, this is already a really good team. And I think that they did make upgrades. Do you feel differently? Is that why you phrase like that? Like, it's not perfect, right? Like, you want them to have like a two-way wing. But those guys cost you $20 million, not 10.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really feel like Max Strus is a huge upgrade over Caris LeVert. I also don't know how I feel about having two non-shooters and Jared Allen and Evan Mobley out there. I tried to figure out a trivia question that worked with that of like one on, the other off. Numbers aren't great. They're not terrible, but they're definitely better when you have them both on. I'm interested to see. I know, how much do you know about Imani Bates? Has that name made its way across the pond?
Like, it's familiar. Did he play like G League Ignite or something? He was like a high school. Is that the guy I'm thinking of? Like, he was good in high school and then not so good in college.
Yeah, he was like one of the top high school prospects going into college. It was like, I forget if he was like number five or number, like, he was. Everyone expected him to be that next elite wing guy, kind of in the 3-4 mold. Hold your Paul George, your Kevin Durant, and then just off the court issues leading to on the court troubles, leading to some apathy. But he had a really solid preseason, you know, like 10 points in 15 minutes, 45% from three on 5.5 attempts per game. So what is that total? I don't know, like 21 attempts. But I'm interested to see if he could be the steal and if he could kind of rekindle and kind of catch fire for Cleveland, because he could be the answer to what they're looking for of just this incredibly long, lanky wing that, if he dedicates himself, like, I don't see why he couldn't be a Lauri Markkanen type if guy for Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that Cleveland makes the jump, is they need to find an answer at the three that can provide some offense and not be a defensive sieve, especially when you've got Garland and Mitchell as your backcourt. And so if that is a guy like Bates, or, you know, I mean, we're probably not expecting a big step for Isaac Okoro or Caris LeVert at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If Strus can be playoff Strus and not regular season Strus. Because he was quietly quite bad for Miami last year, which is, I think, something that should have affected him more to the Miami projection, is just how bad Strus was. But if he can be playoff Strus and provide spacing, then this is going to be, like, this, either way, this is going to be a really good team, because you've got Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who are going to guarantee a good defense. And you've got Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, who are going to guarantee a good offense. And so, regular season, they're probably fine. Like, this is going to be a really good team. It's, if they want to be more than a second round exit, finding an answer at the three who can defend and who can shoot is the challenge.
Yeah. I do also kind of wonder about, like, do you start pushing more chips in now, or do you kind of wait? Because Donovan Mitchell is his age 27 season, but Evan Mobley is only age 21, like, or 22. So you've got a lot of time to wait on Mobley to continue to develop. You don't have a ton of time to wait on Donovan Mitchell. I know the, like, increase of 3-point shooting has prolonged how long small guards can be good for, but you still do see small guards fall off quite a bit when they lose their athleticism, when they hit age 30. You've got like a 3-year span right now with Mitchell to really make your mark. And I know they just got the team together, but there's already been rumors of Mitchell wanting out. Two really small guards. It's a weird team, and I'm kind of interested to see what else they do, because I don't think that they are actually a serious contender, and I don't think second round is good enough for people.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of going the way of a repeat of the Utah Jazz teams that won 50 games every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what can be the factor that gets them over the top? Maybe it's just the league changing. You know, the reason that the Utah Jazz weren't able to succeed is because they ran into the Clippers, who played five guys who could all shoot, drive, and defend. There's probably no one in the league that can. Maybe. There are fewer of those teams now. The league isn't going that way. And then they ran into Luka, who's just like the, you know, best pick and roll player in the league, and they'd never known who could defend him. And so, like, maybe it's a different league.
Yeah, if you think about it, they're positioned really well, in theory, to match up against Milwaukee. They've got these two bigs that you can kind of alternate, have one maybe step out on Lopez, the other one kind of guard Giannis, tag team, alternate between them, have them both drop to the paint. But also they got punked by Mitchell Robinson. You know, if you're getting beat up and overpowered by Mitchell Robinson, I'm just going to guess Giannis is going to do the same to you. I think that's going to be a problem if they play Philadelphia. They don't have a good wing or guard stopper on the team. So I think Boston is kind of out of the question, and Dame Lillard from Milwaukee also probably going to torch them. I'm struggling more and more to see what Cleveland's going to do. And I liked their offseason. I thought Max Strus was going to be good. And then the more I just kind of looked at the numbers and went back and watched there's some tape, I was like, oh, maybe he wasn't actually good defensively. Maybe it was just the rest of the team around him that was good defensively. And if that's more the case, that the rest of the team around him is good defensively, then I don't know that he's any better than Caris LeVert. So I went for a slight regression. I went for 48 wins. And I think that they can win fewer games and be in a better place if they allow Mobley to develop more. And that's what I think I would focus on this season, is we have to get him more fluid offensively. We have to, we're going to give up some possessions. We're going to live with him failing offensively as opposed to going with Donovan Mitchell for 71 points again.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's the other way that they can go from a first or second round out to a championship contender, is if you can't address the hole on the wing, then Evan Mobley takes a step forward where he becomes a All-NBA type of player, which I think, you know, we were both really high on him in previous years, taking a step forward offensively, which never came to fruition. We probably overrated him in our top 100s, just expecting him to take a step that he still hasn't really taken. But he is still an elite defender. I agree that Mobley developing offensively is probably the way that Cleveland can get better. I still had them as a 52-win team. One of the best regular season teams in the league, just because, like I said, like, you've got Mitchell and Garland, you're going to be elite offensively. You've got Allen and Mobley, you're going to be elite defensively. Like, they're going to win regular season games. It's the playoffs that are the question for these guys.
Yeah, like, they absolutely could still be elite during the regular season. They could. They could. Mitchell can get you to 50 wins. Mitchell and Garland. The defense was the number one defense in the league. That's not going to change any. Like, we've sat here and we've nitpicked their guards defense, their wings defense. They had the best fucking defense in the league.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, the defense is not as much as we want to pick on them. Like,
there are two guys on the roster that can play defense, and they're number one defense. So yeah. It's obviously not that big of an issue.
Yeah. Fun fact about Cleveland, they have Pete Nance on their team, at least at the moment. They haven't cut him yet. Pete Nance is the younger brother of Larry Nance Jr., son of Larry Nance Sr., the third Nance to play for Cleveland. Well, that was nice. I don't know if they'll keep him, but it's family tradition now.
I like it.
And that brings us to Milwaukee. Don't have a great question for Milwaukee, but I thought this one might be a little bit of fun. The Milwaukee Bucks franchise dates back to the 1968-69 season. Giannis Antetokounmpo is arguably the best player in franchise history. How many of the key stats in Bucks franchise history does he lead? And by key, I went for basic counting stats. So we have minutes, points, assists, rebounds, steals, and blocks. And I have both total and per game numbers. So we can either go one by one, or out of the 12 minutes per game, points per game, so on and so forth. You can just tell me how many out of the 12 you think he is the total leader in, or per game leader in.
That is tricky, because he's put up really high, like, box score stats, but he really hasn't been there for that long. Can you give me the hint and tell me how long the player currently known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was there for? Compared to how long Giannis has been?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played 467 games for the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis has played 719 games.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes me a lot more confident. I'm guessing he's the leader in points total and probably per game.
You are right on one of those. He is total points. God. Kareem still has him on points per game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I should have thought about that. I'm guessing he's the leader in total rebounds, but not rebounds per game.
Kareem actually has him at rebounds and rebounds per game, despite
playing
over like 200 fewer games.
Nice. I guess is he being dragged down by like his shitty like 2014 season or something?
Kareem just is insane. It's 15 rebounds per game. Like that.
Oh, okay. Fuck. Never mind.
Yeah.
I think that might be it. Like, there'll be some like guy I've never heard of that leads them in total minutes.
Giannis leads them in total minutes. Okay. Giannis also has total assists for the franchise and total blocks for the franchise.
Respect. Assist is the one that I thought, like, okay, that's the one that he won't be a contender for. But man, what a storied franchise.
Yeah.
A power forward is their all-time leader in assists.
He beat out Paul Pressey and Sidney Moncrief. Also, Chris Middleton is the leader in all-time made threes, which probably isn't that surprising, but you know, that team had Ray Allen and Michael Redd, so I thought that was kind of interesting that Chris has already supplanted them. We've done a lot of Bucks talks in the last couple of weeks with them getting Dame Lillard, but have you gotten to catch any of their preseason action?
No, actually. I've watched quite a bit of preseason, but I don't think I've seen any Bucks games.
So I caught them playing the Thunder, which really I was trying to watch Chet. I'm so in on Chet and Wemby. I'm just having a great time.
Yeah.
Lillard would do a pick and roll with Giannis, and it's exactly everything we thought it would be. Two guys go to Lillard, or, you know, Giannis's man gets caught up. Giannis is in single coverage, and he was just dominating wing Jalen Williams. Like, it was like, you're not sending help. I can be one-on-one with a man, or I can have an advantage. I am bigger, faster, stronger, and I'm just going for it. And like, Lillard really struggled to shoot, but Giannis just looks absolutely free. It's so much spacing for him.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty mediocre on offense last year, and then added a guy who consistently has driven elite offenses. Actually had the Bucks behind the Cavs.
What?
If you would believe it.
What? Okay, what type of chicanery is this? What are you putting the Bucks at?
I had them at 51.6, so I had the Cavs at 52.5, so they're pretty similar.
I'm putting you down as 52 for 51.6. That feels like a 52. Was this knowing? Yeah. Did you run these algorithms knowing that they got Damian Lillard?
Which is why I'm predicting a, you know, about top five offense, but some defensive regression.
We just talked about the Cavs having the best defense in the league with Garland and Mitchell. I think the Bucks defense will be fine. You know, playoffs, we'll see how Middleton holds up. Can he be an elite wing stopper? But I think night to night in the regular season, he'll probably do just fine. But man.
And then the other thing that I consider too is new coach, which could go either way. I think as a regular season coach, Mike Budenholzer is almost, you know, infallible. And so I would expect that the coaching is probably a slight downgrade, which, you know, obviously it could go either way. But, you know, Mike Budenholzer is probably a top five regular season coach.
Okay. Well, I'm going 60 wins here.
Okay. Fuck it. Do you have their over-under?
Yeah, their over-under is 53.5.
Okay.
Which, you know, but okay, they were a 58 win team last year. So I'm like, you know, you always got to hedge it a little bit going under because you can have injuries and whatnot. But I think Milwaukee is really, really fucking good. But here, they've been playing Jay Crowder a lot during the preseason. He seems limbered up. You know, he's old. He's not great and he's old. But if you running a Middleton and Crowder with Lillard, Giannis, and Brooke, that now still has a lot of defensive capabilities. That still has a lot of shooting out there to space the floor. This is going to be the most open offense. And I think that five-man unit is going to be really good defensively. You don't have to do that during the regular season. I mean, you can go Pat Connaughton, who is fine defensively, Andre Jackson, and Marjon Beauchamp, add a lot of youthful energy that I think is going to be useful in the regular season. And then they have Drew Timmy. And Drew Timmy, you don't watch college ball. You don't know anything about Drew Timmy, do you?
Is he a big white guy that can shoot?
He's a big white guy. I don't know that he can really shoot.
Okay. But I know nothing about him, but Drew Timmy sounds like a big white guy that can shoot.
You know, do you remember the years when it was like the Spurs would draft someone and everyone would be like, ah, fuck, how the Spurs get this guy? Like, that's such a Spurs pick. That's been Drew Timmy for like the last 5 years because he keeps coming back to college. He's like been one of the best college players for the last several years. Pulling up his college numbers now. Yeah, it's 20 points, like 8 boards. Like Drew Timmy, just a stellar player that people were expecting him to come out like 3 years ago, and he just keeps going back to college. I think there's a chance that he could provide some valuable backup minutes, during this season.
I will always be dubious of a rookie providing value. But that does bring up a question that I did have, which is about the Bucks' depth. It's like the starting lineup should be pretty good. Well, I mean, they've got 4 really good players. And then you've got Bobby Portis, who's a very good sixth man. And then your Pat Connaughton, Campaign, Malik Beasley, Jay Crowder, who I guess if he has a bounce back, that's a decent player. And then you're like into Beauchamp and Robin Lopez. There are some depth concerns around this team as well.
I hate to say this, they may have cut Drew Timmy.
Oh no. This is what you get for bringing up a rookie and being like, this guy's gonna contribute.
Timmy's been cut. Sad day. But my point still stands. Someone's going to pick up this guy, and he will provide some big white stiff minutes. He will be the next Luka Garza for a team.
Awesome.
I don't have too many worries about their depth. Like, Robin Lopez is a fine, serviceable backup center for the regular season. He won't play in the playoffs. They'll go down to a 3-big rotation of Lopez, Giannis, and Bobby Portis. Wing-wise, I trust Middleton, I trust Pat, and if Crowder can have a bounce back, that's your shooting guard, small forward rotation, those three. And then Lillard's going to play 40 minutes in the playoffs, and during the regular season, you can put in Campaign. So, like,
do you know who their fifth starter is going to be?
I think they've been going with Crowder and Beasley, because I don't think Middleton's been playing much in the preseason, and he might miss a couple of the early games.
So it's probably Beasley then.
Yeah, Beasley apparently has dedicated himself to defense.
Oh, nice!
And is going to be a defensive player.
Is he modeling himself after Derek White?
God, he should.
Derek White is his icon.
Do you have that D'Angelo Russell quote?
I think I sent it to the group chat.
I see here. Yeah. All right. So I wanted to bring this up in the pod. D'Angelo Russell said, "My inspiration has been Derek White. I want to be Derek Wright. He doesn't get a lot of credit for what he does, makes all the winning plays, and that's what I want to do." D'Lo, you're not giving him the credit. He is better than you. We would all like you to be Derek White. Do it. Be Derek White. And Beasley, also be Derek White. Just everyone, if you're not good enough to be Damian Lillard, you should aim to be Derek White.
Yeah, if everyone could just like become a really athletic long point guard with elite defense and screen navigation, intelligence, and foot speed, you know, anyone can do that. Like, it's fucking Derek White.
Yeah, it's not that hard. Just be Derek White.
Yeah, that's like it's like the offensive version of like who's just like a guard that cannot shoot.
Rajon Rondo.
Let's go with that. That's like the equivalent of like Rajon Rondo coming out and being like, you know, you look at what Steph Curry does for his team's offense. That's my goal this year is to be Steph Curry. It's like my boy. It's not a matter of effort or like, I mean, like it is partly a matter of effort, but like this dude has like the best foot speed in the league, and you have the worst among like starting point guards. Like there are physical attributes that you do not possess, in addition to your lack of effort and defensive IQ. Like, it's not a matter of, I'm going to beat Derek White. Like, you couldn't if you tried. Derek White is better than you.
Yeah. And Milwaukee would really love a Derek White. So, Beasley.
Milwaukee would would cry tears of joy if they could get Derek White. Like, that would guarantee a championship if they had Derek White.
Oh, God.
If they had D'Angelo Russell, he'd be a solid sixth man.
Yeah. But, you know, Beasley, only a couple of years off of his 19 points per game season. So he's got that.
Yeah. And he can bomb, and they probably need some shooting. Like, mm-hmm. this dude will put shots up where they don't really have probably anyone else on the roster besides Dame. Like, to a lesser degree, Middleton, who will just, like, if they get it and there's a foot of space, they are going up with it.
Mm-hmm. Lopez is a decent shooter. We're talking like 35 to 37% the last couple of years. But he also has a slow shot. So, like, that.
Yeah, guys don't stick to him.
Mm-hmm. You can recover, or you can get back to Lopez. He's got, 7 foot, so he's got a lot of length, and that's going to be hard to get out on. But I'll live with, if I'm dealing with a Giannis Dame pick and roll and they kick to Lopez, I will live with that shot, which is a scary place to be. Like, we're living with Splash Mountain, just raining them down.
Do you think this team will be top 5 on offense and defense? At 60 wins, you must be thinking that, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were 4th in defense and 12th in offense, giving up Drew for Dame. I think that's might drop them back. Maybe not top 5, but I think like top 6 or 7 in both. With one of them being top 3. Like, I could see offense being 3rd and defense being like 6th.
Right. I'm gonna bump them up a little bit as we talk through it. I think that I didn't give them enough credit for probably the offense. So I'm going to project them to be about 6th on both ends of the floor, which works out at 53 wins.
Got a whole
just over the Cavs.
Well, that pretty much concludes our Eastern Conference. If we look at all of our wins, I'm just going to list the wins for each team here. We're projecting the Bucks with 57, Celtics with 55, Cavs 50, Knicks 49, 76ers 48. Hawks 44, Pacers 43, Heat 40, Magic 39, Bulls 37, Nets 36, Raptors 33, Hornets 33, Pistons 27, and the Wizards 24. We don't have anyone in the teens, and I feel like there will be some team that only wins 19 or fewer games.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit hard to project who that team will be, because it's probably someone that gets an injury and they blow it up. Mm. Or it's, it's downward gravity that's not really like projectable. In the same way that I was talking about, the Bulls are, or the Pistons will play at a 31 win pace, but then they'll stop doing that. That's hard to predict. And so I think it's better to go over, because you don't know who that team's going to be that falls apart.
Absolutely. That's that's the wins. That's the Eastern Conference, baby. Dylan, any MVP thoughts? Just to get a preseason MVP prediction on the pod official.
First thing, I wish I could remember. I can't remember who brought this up, but almost no one ever wins MVP without having a top 5 finish beforehand. And so that immediately narrows it down quite a bit. And then, you've got to be one of probably the top 4 seeds. And so that's going to narrow it down further. And I think that there are, based on our projections, how many guys fit into that? Maybe 4? Giannis, Jokic, Tatum, and Steph?
Yeah. I think Luka also might make that.
Yeah, but we're not predicting him to win enough games, right?
That's true. Yeah, we've got Golden State in the 2 seed in the West. We've got Jokic. Technically Durant could also be there as a former MVP and someone who we anticipate being on a top 3 seed.
Yeah, yep. No, that's a good point. That's the guy I forgot. It's going to be tricky, because it's either going to be like a apology MVP for Jokic, being like, hey, sorry, we doubted you. Like, you should have been MVP last year. You're best player in the playoffs. You're the best player in the world. Have this MVP. And like, I'm sure he's going to deserve it as well. Like, he's going to have a really good regular season. Or it could be another one for Giannis if he comes out and the Bucks are the 1 seed. Although, people will detract and say he's got
another top 15 player.
And so I think it could be the year that it just defaults to Jason Tatum, where No one really wants to give it to Jokic again. Giannis is good, but he's doing the same thing that he's always done, and he's got a better team around him. You know, Steph is maybe a little bit of a regression, or he'll miss some games. And, you know, Tatum is going to be great. He should be better. The Celtics are going to be an awesome team, and he doesn't miss any games. So I think it could be the Tatum year. He does have a top five. He was top five last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was fourth.
Yeah. And so, yeah, if I'm playing it safe, I'll probably just go Jokic again. But I think it's going to be a first-time MVP in Jason Tatum.
That was kind of my thoughts. That's about it. I also think that there's a bit of a championship hangover potential for Jokic. I mean, man, party hard. He's out there doing the Sambor shuffle on the dance floor, not just on the court. I think if he has a slow season, and I don't think he wants it. He fully should have had it. We all did the joke last year of like, all right, who's our MVP with like a month left? And we're like, Jokic. Cool. And then he shut himself down. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there's a really strong chance that Tatum, I think the Celtics are the top team in the East. It will just go to Tatum as best player on quote unquote best team or team with best record.
Yeah. One of the dark horse, I think, is if Philly outperform what everyone's expecting from them. If you go back to the season before they got James Harden, how many games did they win? Like I think they won like 50 games, right?
Yep.
If the Sixers can come out with James Harden not doing anything, and Embiid can be awesome again, and you know the Sixers are a really good seed, then maybe. But he does have a massive cloud hanging over him over the fact that everyone probably regrets giving it to him last year, and he came out and just went in the playoffs again.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like it's harder to win your second MVP, and I think it's gonna be doubly hard to win it when you had that disappointing year. Like I think there was a case for Dirk in another year that Dirk probably could have won another one after his MVP, and everyone was just like,
we're not falling for that.
We're not.
Yeah.
We don't want to be made a fool again. And so I think Embiid would have to be so dominant. Like the Sixers would have to win like 60 games, and it'd be just Embiid putting the team on his back. Cause there could be zero questions about it. So after Dirk's MVP, the closest he ever got in voting was sixth. Like he falls from first to 11th. The next year.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Maybe it's too big of a hurdle to overcome.
My dark horse is Shea.
Yeah. Because that's the other guy with the top five finish quietly, right? And so if the Thunder can overperform, if they can get to a four seed, then there's your guy who's top four and has a top five finish before. And like the media is going to love it, right? And the fans are going to love it. There's going to be no one saying Shea Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't. You know, there are no SGA haters the way that there are for almost every other player. And so, I think that like that'd be a feel good story if the Thunder are top four seed with this young, fun team. SGA has proven to be that level of player.
Absolutely. I mean, they were a 40 win team last season. They go to 50 wins this year, which I think is really realistically possible. And everyone's making a big deal that they don't have depth at the big. And I'm like, yeah, they started big Jalen Williams as their center for the majority of last season.
They started Jerome Robinson Earl for like half the season. And is he even on an NBA roster?
No. They
they pulled a dude off the street, started him half the games, won 40 games, and then that dude's now like in the G League.
Yeah. Plus, I keep saying this. They are going to make a Kelly Olynyk-sized trade. It's going to happen. Olynyk and Shea played so well together in FIBA. And I don't think there's space for him in the rotation for Utah. They just traded for John Collins. They want to play Walker Kessler more. They already got Lowry. That's their front court. That's okay. So now you have Kelly Olynyk. Sure, you could have him as a backup. But you also could trade him to OKC and get your pick back. Because right now the Jazz's pick is top 10 protected to OKC. I think you get your pick back, get a couple more seconds, maybe a bad first from someone. I think that's probably a great move for Utah. And then now the Thunder have depth in the big.
Yeah, and that's the exact player that really succeeds with the Thunder as a big, is like Mark Daigneault makes it work with poor defensive centers. Like he finds a way to be decent. And they love to play five out. And so when you get now a guy who's like not just a you know credible threat, but like an actual really good 3-point shooter, and you put him around out on the floor and he's standing at the top of the arc and SGA is going downhill, and now you've got a choice of leave Kelly Olynyk wide open or let SGA go one-on-one, then that becomes like that's the way that the Thunder succeed.
Yeah. I think they're going to be so dangerous this year. It's going to be good. I think they're going to be good.
Have you seen the Josh Giddey Enjoy a TikTok account?
Yes, sir. I'm in a fancy basketball league with him.
Oh, nice. My girlfriend was saying that she wishes she could get on she doesn't want all the NBA content, but she wants to be in one little niche. And so her favorite player is Kristaps Porzingis. And she's like, I wish I could get the odd Kristaps Porzingis TikTok without getting all this other NBA stuff. And I was like, do you know, there's an NBA account that you might enjoy because it's just so fun. So shout out Josh Giddey Enjoyer.
Shout out Josh Giddey. He's been a really cool dude. Jack, the Kings fan, started a group chat. And he's been one of the coolest dudes in that chat.
I love that all the best NBA TikTok dudes are all doing shit together, you know?
It's really fun. And because of my proximity to Aaron, I'm getting pulled into this because I got 5,000 followers right now. That's not much in the grand scheme of things. The other guys are 70,000, Slim Dookie's in the chat. Yokichio Stars is in there. We tried to get Pablo, but Pablo doesn't play fantasy, but he's come on the pod a couple times. Cool dude. So
yeah, man, there's a really great, there's a solid NBA content creator brand. Channel.
Well, since you did a girlfriend story, I gotta tell you the story of my wife, because I told her that Steven Adams is gonna be out, and she's like, that's nice, sweetie, doesn't know. And I'm like, no, here's who Steven Adams is, and I showed her a video of him carrying Tony Bradley away, and then showed her the video of the Memphis
Swifty baby,
him being a Swifty. The first words out of her mouth after seeing those is he married? Does he have a girlfriend? what are we asking here, sweetie? What is this? So pretty sure my wife would leave me for Steven Adams. And I'm not going to say that I wouldn't be upset, but I will say that I kind of get it. It's understandable.
Yeah, there are some things you just have to accept as a man in a relationship, and that's that. There are certain people that you just cannot compete with.
Yeah. Steven Adams could steal your girl.
Steven Adams could steal your girl. If, your girlfriend's in the club and Walker Kessler's there, you're just in trouble.
But he won't. And I think that's the thing about Steven Adams. He could, but hopefully he won't.
That's a good point. But hopefully he won't. He seems like a man that respects the sanctity of marriage.
He does. He does. Well, Dylan, any final things you want to say? Any final plugs for the season or takes?
Could I be a pain and just get you to do some math?
Sure.
since you got the spreadsheets, what's our total wins for the West versus total wins for the East?
Total wins for the West versus total wins for the East. We have 628 Western Conference wins. We have 614 Eastern Conference wins. Which means we have 12 more wins than physically possible in the NBA.
That's not bad, actually. That's honestly not bad. I'm not surprised bad. That it's so close. I guess that the East is so strong at the top really elevates them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, 12 wins is easily doable by one team having someone's going to have an unexpected injury. And so I think it's the projections are actually pretty good.
You know what's funny is I actually did the numbers on East versus West last year, and the East had 626 wins. The West had 604, so East beat the West last year, which doesn't usually happen, actually. That's a little bit surprising.
I mean, how much is that getting dragged down by the fact that the Rockets and the Spurs are both in the West and the Celtics and the Cavs? Did they both have the two best records last season?
The Bucks and the Celtics had the two best records last season. And the 76ers
Yeah, Bucks, Celtics, and then the Sixers were third, yeah. And then the Cavs were fifth, so yeah. You get a lot of wins at the top.
I think what really dragged it down was the fact that the Lakers and the Warriors, and even Phoenix, kind of...
And the Clippers.
Yeah, although I kind of... I'm sorry, Dylan. I just expect it from the Clippers to be injured half the year. But like the Lakers, Warriors, Clippers, Suns all kind of ended better than they started, or at least on paper were better at the end than in the beginning. So like, I don't know. Minnesota had some major injuries. Memphis dealt with Ja. Yeah. I think this year bounces back and the West reclaims the throne.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, Dylan, plug your stuff. Where can the people find you?
Still just at the Hoops Temple podcast. I'll get round to it one day, man.
Come on, we gotta get on this TikTok thing.
I gotta get in before like the season fucking starts.
you got 2 days.
Oh shit. I was thinking like, you know, like those like random videos and it's like blind ranking celebrities I'd want to have a beer with. I was like, man, if I can get to like, you know, 5,000 subscribers as an NBA content account, then I can like make those random videos just for fun.
Just got to build it up.
I just got to deliver quality NBA account, quality NBA content so I can blind rank celebrities.
You do the sheep rolling down the hill thing. I find it entertaining. I always want to see if it's going to make it. Never does. Mm. I've seen it twice.
I never watch those. I always skip it. I'm like, no, you're not getting me with this bullshit TikTok. The only exception that I'll make is when Jokic Joestar does his little screw twirly thing. Mm. He's like, I'm just going to do this for a few more seconds so I can get paid for this video. I'm like, respect, man. I'll watch this.
Yep.
You're doing great.
Well, thank you for listening. Please, if you have any questions, thoughts, whatever, email us, hoopstemple@gmail.com. Follow me, Nate_HoopsTemple on TikTok. Love to hear from you guys. Peace out.